call the meeting to order for the Subcommittee on Natural Resources of the Joint Ways and Means Committee for the June 29th, 2017. We have a lot to do. So as we are going to be moving through a number of bills here, and we're going to start off with a work session on House Bill 2270. And we'll open a possible reconsideration and work session on House Bill 2270. Would you please let us know a little bit more?
Yeah, thank you, Chair Frederick. House Bill 2270 previously had a public hearing and work session on June 27th. The subcommittee adopted a -6 amendment to the bill and reported the bill out to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. The proposed -4 amendments were discussed during the meeting but were not adopted. The -7 amendments included the changes contemplated in the -6 amendment and include modified components of the -4 amendment.
The chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended to allow a motion to reconsider the vote by which Senate Bill 2270 was reported out with a recommendation to the full committee. Are there any objections? Seeing none, this chair will now accept a motion to reconsider.
Mr. Chairman, I move to reconsider the vote, by which House Bill 2270 was reported out with a recommendation to the full committee.
Are there any objections? No. The motion carries, and House Bill 2270 is back before the subcommittee. So,
Mr. Chair, now that we're back in work session on House Bill 2270, the LFO recommendation is to withdraw the A6 amendments from the bill and to adopt the A7 amendments and then repass the bill out of committee to the subcommittee with a due pass recommendation. The -7 amendments incorporate the -6 amendments that were previously adopted and also add some provisions to the bill to allow the board of the directors of Oregon Forest Research Institute to adjust their rate of the harvest tax annually for inflation since 1991 on a cumulative basis. And then also has a provision that whereby the Legislative Assembly would ratify and declare valid any tax rate that was adopted by the board of the Oregon Forest Research Institute prior to March 31st, 2017.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move the LFO recommendation, please.
Chair, Co-Chair Witt moves the LFO recommendation on House Bill 2270. Are there any objections? Any discussion? Any objections? No. So moved. We close the work session on House Bill 2270. Now I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 5518. Hello there. Would you tell us more about that?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Senate Bill 5518 is the budget bill for the Department of Environmental Quality. I am, in the interest of time, I'm going to jump right into the work session presentation report and start with the adjustments to current service level that begin on page 3. Package 070 is a reduction to align expenditures and position authority with anticipated revenues at current service level. This package has a total funds reduction of $3,180,360, 11 positions and 13 FTE. Package 113, implement clean air work and real-time metals monitoring. This package provides $2.5 million of general funds to significantly improve DEQ's capacity to monitor the quality of air around specific sites of potential concern and across entire watersheds. I would note that $875,000 of the general fund added in this package is for purchase of equipment and is therefore added on a one-time basis. And that's a total adjustment of an increase of $2.5 million general fund, 9 positions, and 6.76 FTE. Package 114 adds $250,000 general fund to be used to support the wood smoke reduction program, which works with the local communities to reduce wood smoke emissions through wood stove changeouts, education and outreach, and wood stove containment. noted this is added on a one-time basis. That's a general fund addition of $250,000. Package 115, reduce harmful diesel emissions. This package is tied to legislation that would modify the Clean Diesel Engine Fund to make explicit the DEQ's authority to receive Volkswagen settlement funds and expend them under the terms of the final decree. The package adds $737,022 of other funds expenditure limitation for a position to develop administrative rules during the first year of the biennium and then phases in three positions in the later part of the biennium. This, I would note that the settlement agreement allows the recipient to expend up to 15% of the received funds on administrative costs. This is an other funds expenditure limitation increase of $10,737,022 for positions and 2.5 FTE. Package 812, vacant position elimination. This eliminates three NRS 3 positions and a chemist 3 position that's been vacant for more than 1 year for a total funds reduction of $471,127 for positions and 2.5 FTE. Moving on to water quality, starting on package 9 of 30, or page 9 of 30. Is 070 is another revenue reduction package for a total funds reduction of $2,444,434, five positions and 7.14 FTE. Package 120, minimizing the impacts of urban stormwater. The federal law requires municipalities and urban areas to obtain NPDES discharge permits. DEQ has insufficient revenue to administer the program. The agency is proposing a fee increase and a new fee for wastewater permitting to generate $343,729 of other funds and restore two positions and 1.76 FTE that was eliminated in package 070. Package 124, on-site septic systems loan program. This provides $1.3 million of general fund for low-cost loans to repair or replace failing on-site septic systems and $200,000 for administrative costs. It's noted that the DEQ will use an outside contractor to run the program. If the full $200,000 isn't needed for administering, the remaining funds are to be used to fund additional loans. This funding is added on a one-time basis as an increase of $1.5 million general fund. Package 125, water quality permit program improvements. A budget note in the DEQ budget report for the 15-17 biennium directed the agency to work with an outside consultant to identify ways to improve the agency's water quality permit program, which has had a significant backlog for some time. This package is intended to implement the improvements identified in the consultant's report. It increases lottery funds by $500,000 from Measure 76 constitutionally dedicated funds and other funds by $185,560 for a total funds increase of $685,560 for positions 3.27 FTE. Package 801, LFO analyst adjustment. This eliminates an Eastern Basin TMDL position and makes unspecified services and supplies reductions for a total funds or general fund reduction of $350,000, one position and one FTE. Package 812, vacant position elimination. This eliminates two NRS 4 positions, an NRS 2 position, and a chemist 1 position, and an administrative specialist position vacant for more than 1 year for an other funds reduction of $520,343, five positions and 3.50 FTE. Moving on to land quality, starting on page 16 of 30. There's another 070 revenue shortfall package for a total funds reduction of $815,653, seven positions and 5.28 FTE. Package 130, this package supports the continued implementation of DEQ's material management 2050 vision, which is a plan for sustainable materials management. Their agency received funding to initiate the program during the current biennium through an increase in solid waste permit fees. This package is funded with approximately $2.5 million. The total other funds expenditure limitation increase associated with this package is $2,490,130, five positions and 4.25 FTE. Package 132, restore underground storage tank inspections. Current fee revenue is insufficient to meet the inspection requirements of the federal underground storage tank program. This package would add $629,324 of other funds expenditure limitation, three positions and three FTE. The revenue for this package are in House Bill 2268, which you will be considering for a work session later. Package 135, orphan site cleanup. This adds other funds expenditure limitation to expend a portion of the $10 million in general obligation bonds requested to be issued during the 17-19 biennium. The orphan site account is used to fund investigations and cleanup at sites where parties are responsible for the pollution or unknown, unable, or unwilling to contribute to the cleanup work. The orphan site account is also used to meet Oregon's obligations at federally funded Superfund sites. Oregon must contribute 10% of EPA's cleanup costs and pay 100% of long-term maintenance costs at federally funded Superfund sites. DQ, I would note that DQ does not request orphan site bonds every biennium, but is requesting this biennium. This is an other funds increase of $3,682,500. Package 136 adds $50,000 general fund to support a task force on lead paint. Package A12, vacant position elimination, eliminates an NRS 1 and NRS 3 position that are vacant for more than 1 year for an other funds reduction of $354,417, two positions and two FTE. Moving on to agency management. Package 161 adds $750,000 general fund, $351,685 of other funds expenditure limitation, seven positions and 3.63 FTE. Continue planning and development through March 18 of an environmental data management system that will provide interactive service to the public and stakeholders while also standardizing and streamlining DQ's internal business practices. The agency anticipates it can complete the stage gate to endorsement within this time period. DEQ will develop a funding request for the February legislative session to continue the EDMS project through the remainder of the 17-19 biennium. I note that this funding is added on a one-time basis. Package 812, vacant position elimination, eliminates five administrative positions vacant for more than a year for an other funds reduction of $606,896, five positions and 4.54 FTE. Moving on to the non-limited program on page 26 of 30, package 181. This package adds non-limited expenditure limitation of about $150,000 for cost of issuance associated with bonds issued to provide the state match component of the federal capitalization grant for the Clean Water State Revolving Loan Fund. The agency also proposes an additional $30 million in other funds and non-limited limitation to make the loans during the using federal funds provided to Oregon for this purpose. So it's a total adjustment, non-limited adjustment of $30,150,000. Package 183, this package documents the $300,000 in non-limited other funds expenditure limitation that will be used to pay bond issuance costs associated with two 11H bond sales during the 17-19 biennium that will total $10.3 million, and it's a $300,000 non-limited other funds increase. Moving on to the debt service program, page 29 of 30. Package 191 provides other funds expenditure limitation to pay debt service on short-term bonds issued to meet the state match requirement for federal capitalization grants to maintain Oregon's Clean Water State Revolving Fund. This is linked with Policy Package 81, which would sell the bonds to provide resources for the new loans. Debt service for the bonds will be sourced from the interest earnings received by the Clean Water State Revolving Fund and totals $10 million, just a little over $10 million, at $10,020,000. Of other funds expenditure limitation. And finally, package 193, this package adds $521,250 of general fund for debt service for an early sale of $5 million in 11H general obligation bonds for orphan site program. And that is it for the adjustments to the current service level.
Thank you. Are there any questions or discussion? Yes, Senator Turok.
No, I didn't. The first question I have is, colleagues, we know that House Bill 2269 never got off the ground. So I want to make sure that there's no additional money to lower emission standards without legislative approval. Is there additional money in here to lower those emission standards?
Mr. Chair, Senator Girod, there's no additional funding provided in this budget for additional rulemaking around Cleaner Oregon or other air quality programs, rulemaking programs. There is, however, the general fund added for the equipment and staff for the monitoring.
Okay, because the question I have is on June 13th, they put out a new standards for emissions, and yet they haven't completed the emissions inventory. And that won't be included until September. So I'm trying to figure out what's going on in the agency here.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I would just note that the department obviously has a base budget and a continuing budget for this biennium and approval to work on clean air quality rulemaking for this biennium. And I would assume, if based on the previous legislative intent expressed through legislation, that the department could continue working on such rulemaking during the 17-19 biennium.
Just a final.
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, colleagues, I mean, this really hit my district, and this was a huge publicity stunt that was done by the agency. And now they're acting like, well, we didn't get 2269, and they're going to back off of it, but they're what they're doing is absolutely the opposite. And so, if you don't have the emissions inventory, and you're not going to have that till September, what the heck are they putting out new standards for? And they're saying this isn't going to impact business, but I got businesses in my district that say they will absolutely leave if these standards go through. So I just am extremely disappointed, and I'll be a no, and I'll be a very vocal no, and this agency's out of control. The legislature's supposed to give oversight, and when we can't give oversight and you have an agency running rogue, we have a problem.
Any other comments? Questions? Yes, Representative Witt.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. I was scratching my forehead.
Head. Keep your hand out.
Mr. Chair, LFO's moves the LFO recommendation is to current service level adjustments as we just worked through in the work session presentation report.
Chair Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move the LFO recommendation to Senate Bill 5518.
Thank you. Chair Witt removes the LFO recommendation to Senate Bill 5518. Is there any discussion? Any objection? No? So moved.
Moving on to key performance measures. LFO is recommending approval of the proposed key performance measures and targets, which includes the deletion of two measures and the approval of three new measures.
Thank you.
Yes. Mr. Chairman, I move the LFO recommendation on key performance measures.
Chair Witt moves the LFO recommendation on key performance measures. Is there any discussion? Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In addition to some of the larger issues that we've all heard about this session, I am very pleased that we've been able to address a host of other issues. And, Mr. Chairman, you and I have had discussion about things that we thought absolutely had to be done in order to protect the citizens as well as the environment of the state of Oregon. And even in these very challenged budget times, I'm pleased that that the key performance measures address such issues as wood smoke, stormwater, septic systems, water quality, orphan site cleanups, and lead paint, among a few. Mr. Chairman, I want to thank the full committee too for the efforts that they've made to enable us to be able to approve these key performance measures. I think they are absolutely critical to the department's mission. So thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments or discussions? I want to point out that, and I'm pleased to see, I think there's a significantly more that needs to be done, but three of the key performance measures deal particularly with air quality. And I'm pleased to see that that's part of this effort here. If there's no other discussion, is there any opposition to this? No? So moved.
LFO recommends a budget of $44,981,201 of general fund, $4,687,925 lottery funds, $172,864,750 of other funds, $131,686,687 of other funds unlimited, and $29,055,157 of federal funds, 743 positions, which is 722.14 FTE, which is reflected in the dash 2 amendment.
And Mr. Chairman, just so that I'm clear, Ms. Siebert, that is the dash 2 amendments in essence in full.
Yes.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move adoption of the dash 2 amendments to House Bill 5518.
Thank you. Chair Witt moves the adoption of the dash 2 amendments to House Bill 5518. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So moved.
LFO recommends that Senate Bill 5518, as amended by the dash 2 amendment, be moved to the Ways and Means Full Committee.
Mr. Chairman, I move Senate Bill 5518 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Chair Witt moves the Senate Bill 5518 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Sorry.
would you please call the roll?
Representative Esquivel?
No.
Representative Helm?
Aye.
Representative Nathanson?
Aye.
Representative Lewis?
No.
Representative Witt?
Aye.
Senator Urad?
No.
Senator Taylor?
Aye.
Senator Frederick?
Yes. 5518, Senate Bill 5518 is passed. I guess I will be taking it to the floor.
Oh, I'd actually like to carry it.
House?
I'll carry it to the House, too.
Huh? Who will be?
Now, the House objects on that issue.
Who will be carrying it?
We're trading places.
It's nice having lunch with you.
Chair Witt, who would you like to carry it in the House?
Anyone else? I'll do it if no one else.
Okay. That's good. And we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 5518. We're going to open a work session on House Bill 2268. Welcome. You can put your name tag back up.
Oh.
There we go.
He won't know who you are.
I won't know who you are.
That's right. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2268 relates to underground storage tank fees. It establishes the following fee schedule for each of the underground storage tanks subject to permit requirements. $195 for calendar year 2018, $245 for calendar year 2019, $295 for calendar year 2020, and then finally $325 for calendar year 2021 and each subsequent calendar year. LFO is recommending the bill as is.
Thank you. You're up.
Mr. Chairman, give me just a moment.
Sure.
To shuffle my papers, please. I move House Bill 2268 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Chair Witt moves House Bill 2268 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So moved. I needed to
call the roll.
Do I need to call the roll?
No
objection.
I actually do.
You do object? Okay.
Catch. Then so I'd like to call the roll.
Call the roll, if you would, please.
Representative Esquivel?
No.
Representative Helm?
Aye.
Representative Power?
Aye.
Representative Lewis?
No.
Representative Witt?
Aye.
Senator Girard?
No.
Senator Taylor?
Aye.
Senator Frederick?
Yes. House Bill 2268, having the majority, is now has now passed, and I will be taking that to the full committee. And who would like to do that on the in the House? Anybody in particular?
Okay.
Representative Helm, thank you very much. Okay, and we switch now. I guess do we switch now or no? Thank you.
We do.
We switch now.
Pause. Needs to do.
Paul's leaving. So we're closing that House Bill 2268 work session, and we're moving on to a public hearing and work session on Senate Bill 1008.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Co-Chairs, members of the committee, Meg Bushman-Reinhold with the Legislative Fiscal Office. Senate Bill 1008 authorizes the state to receive money from the Volkswagen Environmental Mitigation Trust Agreement and deposit the money in the Clean Diesel Engine Fund. The bill specifies that money in the Clean Diesel Engine Fund must be used to award grants to owners and operators of school buses to replace, repower, or retrofit diesel-powered school buses. DEQ is going to require two positions for this, and the personal services costs are estimated to be $271,551 for and $334,216 for the 2017-19 and 2019-21 biennium, respectively. There's no amendment on this bill.
Thank you. Well, I have a list here of six people. So, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't see you there. Thank you.
I was lurking outside.
You were lurking. In fact, I should say that we have an overflow crowd in hearing room E. Hello, everybody in hearing room E.
They're having a good time.
We can't see you in there, but hello. Thank you.
Thank you, Co-Chair Frederick, Co-Chair Witt, colleagues. I'm Michael Dembro. I represent District 23, that's Northeast Southeast Portland, in the Oregon Senate. And happy to bring to you Senate Bill 1008 in its B in gross form. It comes to you in this form on a 5-0 vote from Senate Rules. Colleagues, we've known for several years and with increasing certainty what a risk to health the particulates from unfiltered diesel engines are. You'll find details about that from others with a medical and public health background among the many documents that have been placed on the record for this bill. In order to address those health risks, in the early years of this century, the federal government, under the George W. Bush administration, put a requirement in place that all new diesel engines, both on-road and off-road, need to include technology that largely captures and removes toxic materials. All engines built since 2007 meet this standard. That's a great thing. But we still face an enormous problem. One of the positive things about diesel engines is that they're strong and they're long-lived. But that's part of the problem. They're also expensive. And so turnover in many sectors is slow. One of those sectors is school buses. School buses are a particular problem because the particulates that they emit are not only inhaled outside the vehicles, but also inside the vehicles. And science shows that young, developing lungs are particularly at risk of long-term damage. This is a problem for kids all over the state, notably in rural areas where kids may be spending lots of time on the bus, on those long trips from home to school and from school to home. Recognizing this, the legislature back in 2009 passed House Bill 2795. It required all districts either to retrofit their buses with particulate trapping devices by 2017 or replace the buses by 2025. And unfortunately, though, I'll say that without our passing this bill, many districts are not going to get there. You may or may not know that 70% of the cost of replacing a bus is picked up by the Oregon Department of Education from our school fund. And the districts are left with a 30% responsibility. In some cases, it's more. In some cases, it's less. Rural areas get a higher amount from the state. But even that 30% became a struggle for many districts once the recession hit. As a result, some districts that would have liked to retrofit buses just didn't have the money to do so. Now that we're in 2017, that option is no longer available to them. And for many, their prospects of finding the dollars to replace their vehicles by 2025 are equally dim. Senate Bill 1008 seeks to address both of those problems. First, it extends the 2017 sunset for retrofitting until 2025, so that districts retain the option of retrofitting rather than replacing if that works better for their fleet conversion timetable. And that is the case for a number of districts. Second, as I'm sure you know, the state of Oregon will be the beneficiary of a sizable settlement with Volkswagen and potentially with other manufacturers around false allegations regarding the air quality impacts of their diesel cars. We'll be receiving approximately $70 million from a settlement trust that is being set up, whose purpose will be to mitigate the impacts of diesel emissions from buses and trucks in our state. Senate Bill 1008 creates the framework for the state of Oregon to request its share of the mitigation trust dollars, including the principles and priorities for what we will do with those dollars. Settlement dollars will go into the existing DEQ Clean Diesel Engine Fund, which exists largely to distribute grants from federal sources. Senate Bill 1008 directs DEQ to use the first tranche of the VW settlement dollars to clean up our school bus fleet. It'll allow us to retrofit or replace at least 450 buses over the next few years at a cost of around $20 million. I would say that there is very broad consensus for using these initial dollars in this way. As I'm sure you know, there has been considerable debate and discussion over the past few years about how best to address our considerable diesel problem in general, particularly in high-impact areas such as the Portland metro region. I chaired a broad stakeholder work group that worked hard to gain understanding of the problem and try to reach areas of agreement. We all agreed that we need to focus on school buses initially. We also agreed that we need to gain a better understanding of the scope of the problem, particularly with off-road diesel engines, such as those used in construction equipment. We have a lot of information about the on-road side of the diesel world, because trucks and buses need to be registered with ODOT. But there's nothing like that for construction or ag equipment. We don't know how old the equipment is, where it's being deployed, and how much it's being used. To that end, a parallel effort to the bill that's before you today is a funding package that will allow an inventory of off-road equipment to be done over the next couple of years. DEQ and Associated General Contractors are or have reached agreement on what the budget narrative for that would look like, directing that inventory to happen. Colleagues, with respect to the other uses of the VW dollars, there we have not yet reached consensus, I would say. And so discussions will be ongoing about how best to use the remaining dollars that will be available to us from VW in a way that will really move the needle in the most cost-effective way with respect to diesel, particularly in those high-impact areas where we have vulnerable populations who are being hit with this problem. Colleagues, I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have about the bill itself. It's pretty straightforward in its current form. One thing I do want to point out, just to put on the record, is a section of the bill that has to do with rules. It's Section 11, giving DEQ rulemaking authority. This actually, DEQ is not being given rulemaking authority over the VW dollars. This is referring to the existing program that's in place, the Clean Diesel Fund. In terms of the other uses of the VW money, what controls here is the prior clause, sub 3 of section 10, which says that except for awarding grants pursuant to subsection 2 of this section, that is school buses, the department may not award grants from the monies described under subsection 1 of this section, that is the VW money, without prior approval by the Legislative Assembly by law. So, colleagues, with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Do we have any questions of the senator? Yes, Representative
Thank
Lewis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator, looking at the bill, I see the language in there about replacing a vehicle, but it specifically says replace the vehicle. Is there a way to replace just the diesel engine with an upgraded or an updated beyond 2007 in the bill?
Yeah, I think there should be the language of repower. And repower means substituting a newer engine for the older engine.
Okay, yes. Thank you.
Representative Esquivel.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think, Senator, I like this program because it's from a diesel situation helping diesel situations. I don't want to do like we did with the tobacco settlement and end up balancing our budget. With that, I'm real pleased that we have a good nexus here.
Thank you for that comment, Representative. I agree with you completely. You know, the challenge that we are trying to address here is a public health challenge, and I believe that every dollar from that fund needs to be spent on things that impact public health.
Senator Girard.
Thank you. I just need to put on the record that my wife was part of the VW settlement. I suppose I have to as well, because I had one as well.
Oh, did you?
Of course, they haven't fixed it yet, but I still have it.
Good point.
If we're doing that, I'll have to.
You win as well. Okay, all you diesel guys, gals, stand up.
Any other questions? Thank you.
Yes, thank you
very much. I'm going to call up, is it Lauren Hutwick?
Hutnick.
Sorry. Yeah. Hutnick and Mike Fries.
I Mike's in the overflow.
Mike, are you in the overflow there? If you are, we're calling Mike.
I love Mike.
We will wait. Would you go? You can start without him there.
Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Lauren Hutnick. Next month, it'll be 1 year that I became a resident of the state of Oregon. I am a truck driver. I'm an owner-operator. I came from the state of California a year ago, and I spoke in front of the California Air Resource Boards 11 times. And I fought this thing for dang near 6 years. When I read SB 1008, it read like the way CARB wrote it to happen. I have been in more seminars. I have been in more classes with people that have PhDs, doctorates, doubles. And every one of them have told me that the scientists that have put this thing together have built it to make it look the way it is. There is no correlation. Dr. Dunn, who is a doctor for the United States Army out of Fort Hood, Texas, has said there is zero correlation between diesel deaths and the environment. Dr. Enstrom spoke out about this. Lost his PhD at a tenure at UCLA. Now, keep in mind, this is all built upon junk science that Mary Nichols, who is the chairwoman, sat on the board, admitted on video that Hiran Tran, who had a false PhD, wrote this report, and they still ran with this thing. Now, you guys are talking about buses. That's great. But we use the money for other places other than retrofitting buses. I know in L.A. County, they have had 5 fires with children on them. Is that $80 million worth those children's lives. And any one of you can stand there and say, yes, you're not a human. I have sat in board meetings in Sonoma County, Contra Costa County, in the hall of Redding, and the buses that they do get are brand new, that are retrofitted, are not on the road. They're in the shop being fixed. The filters do not work. They are constantly burning down trucks and buses. Now, is it worth to put these filters where, and somewhere down the line, you guys are going to mandate that all trucks have these filters on them? Because this is, I already played this game once. Because what's happening here, they said the same thing in the CARB meeting. Oh, we're not going to go after everybody. We just want an inventory. Well, guess what? If you not meet 2007, which meets a 2010 emission standards, you're not in the state of California. I left the state of California to get away from that and to come up here and to be married to my wife and build my business. Now you're asking me to go out some way down the road and watch you guys allocate money to start this ball rolling? Because I can tell you right now, this ball's going to roll that direction, and next thing you know, Oregon's going to have a truck and bus rule. Brand new truck, logging truck, out the door, is better than $200,000. A truck for me to make a living is about $135,000. I'm not willing to put that money out alone. Oregon was built upon blood, sweat, and tears and logging. You do not want those filters in the forest. You do not want those filters in the rural areas. Now, I'm going to jump off into another one about science here. Each one of these individuals that has studied this science got a grant, whether it was from the federal EPA, the Democratic Party, or someone that has money. Well, they don't keep getting grant money unless they push this initiative of green and environmental. The money gets stopped. So it's in their best interest to keep this going. Now, I have watched my friends in California lose their homes, lose their business, lose their trucks. I watched a lot of them have to get out of the industry. California right now has a trucking problem. They cannot find trucks. And the prices have gone through the roof down there. What I see happening here in Oregon, I saw in the late 90s and early 2000. You guys have really got to stop and look at this thing.
Could you finish up? Are you done?
At this point in time, if you have any questions, I'll be more than happy to answer them.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Mike?
Co-Chair Frederick, Co-Chair Witt, members of the committee, for the record, Mike Fries here on behalf of Associated Oregon Industries and the Oregon Business Association. This has been an issue that we have been working on since last summer. We have been working with a very broad coalition of local governments, school districts, different sectors of Oregon's business economy to try to identify good opportunities for advancing this money to make really the most benefit for what limited resources we have. We're constantly reminded that $70 million isn't going to go a long way, so we need to be very mindful in how to spend that. While we're not opposed to spending the money on school districts, certainly that was part of our coalition and something that we agreed is important. But we also understand that business owners as well as local governments are coming under, I would say, pressure from different constituencies to start moving their vehicles to something newer than 2007. Yet the bill, as proposed, would limit the resources to school buses alone. Yet the finger is constantly pointed at small business owners and local governments across the state. So we're looking forward to continuing our work as a coalition and hope that we can find some resolution in how to spend this money. We've sat with the environmental community and discussed market transformation in electric vehicles. Those require incentives, and much like electric vehicle incentives, this incentives for diesel can also help those market transformations in areas like Portland that have been asking for those. So we're disappointed with the outcome of the bill. We'll continue to work with legislators and stakeholders in the interim and find a path forward. But we did think that we had that path forward in a dash six amendment and rules. And so that's where we're going to be going forward. So happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mike. Any questions for him? No? No questions? Thank you both. Appreciate that. I'm going to call up Angela Crowley-Cook and Mary Prevetto. I always misspell your name, mispronounce your name. I'm sorry, Mary.
Thank you, Co-Chair Frederick, members of the committee. I'm Angela Crowley-Cook, Legislative Director for Oregon Environmental Council. Oregon Environmental Council supports Senate Bill 1008B. Diesel engines have superior longevity and durability, but unfortunately, older diesel engines emit toxic exhaust that compromises the health of Oregonians. In fact, 90% of Oregonians live where diesel exhaust exceeds health benchmarks. Diesel is a serious public health problem in Oregon, and so we are very disappointed that the critical pieces of Senate Bill 1008, the deadlines to phase out of dirty diesel engines in Oregon, have been removed from this bill. Without these deadlines, there's no guarantee of pollution reduction outside of regular fleet turnover. How many more generations of Oregonians will be subjected to these unhealthy levels of diesel in our air because of industry pressure? Diesel pollution is a straightforward issue. We know we have a problem. We know that the health impacts are serious, especially for the children, the elderly, and those who already have increased health risks. The solutions to address the problem exist, and the money is there to help industry with cleaning up the pollution. But despite this clear path to cleaner air, the legislature has failed Oregonians by not taking the important step of setting deadlines to get rid of these dirty engines. However, we already have deadlines in the law to clean up Oregon school buses, and that's why we should give the school districts funding to comply with the law. The current bill before you takes this small step to cleaning our air. Because school buses already have deadlines, we urge you to pass this bill so we can accept the funding for school buses and then try again to make sure that we're working to reduce pollution for all Oregonians and reduce or upgrade or retrofit all of the dirty engines in Oregon. We're happy to work with industry, with AOI, on market transformation, as long as that includes deadlines to make sure we are actually guaranteed to get rid of these dirty engines. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mary.
Thank you. Thank you, Co-Chair Witt and Senator Frederick and all the committee members for this opportunity. My name is Mary Pivato. I'm the president and founder of Neighbors for Clean Air, an organization established in 2010 to address public health problems from toxic air emissions. So I'm happy for the opportunity today to testify in support of SB 1008. While I also acknowledge that in its current form, it's falling well short of the our members' goals to realize swift and significant reductions of the deadly diesel emissions in Oregon. But we do support strongly the work to address the unique problem and the unique risk of the school bus fleet. Children are uniquely susceptible to the impacts of air pollution. Not only do their smaller lungs breathe more quickly and deeper in comparison to their relative size to adults, but the fact that their lungs and brains are still developing make the long-term health impacts more significant. Emerging science has proven that exposure to diesel particulate emissions, long considered to be an asthma trigger, was upgraded to a known human carcinogen by the World Health Organization in 2014 and is increasingly linked to other non-respiratory risks like neurodevelopmental problems like ADHD and even Alzheimer's. So I'm going to take this opportunity to that end with my support to pass SB 1008 and the funding for school bus cleanup through the VW settlement. I'd like also to underscore that time is of the essence. With my written testimony, I submitted a study done in the wake of the successful school bus cleanup program that was done in Washington State about the time that Oregon passed its first school bus rule. A University of Michigan study showed that children's lung health, not only with the clean school bus technology, was linked not only to improved lung function, but also subsequently to reductions in school absenteeism among those students. This is a demonstration of remarkable efficacy for a public health initiative. So I would hope to urge the school districts that are now going to receive this funding to act well before the allowed 2025 deadline to clean up any buses, particularly the estimated nearly 400, which will not be ready for replacement by the 2025 deadline, and so that any time between now and 2025 is just exposing those children to undue risk. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Yes, Representative Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can you give us any indication of who the largest owner of buses are that had engines replaced in the state of Washington?
I cannot tell you the ownership of those buses. The whole school bus fleets and public transits were all changed out. I assume that they also have first student buses, leased buses as well.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any other questions? No? Thank you. I'm calling up Paige Spence. Is Paige in the room?
She's in the overflow
room. Paige, we're calling you from the overflow room. And David Scarf. Thank you. Why don't you go ahead and start? I'm sure Paige knows her way down here.
All right. Well, thank you for having me here today. I'm here to testify in support of Senate Bill 1008 on behalf of Diesel Emission Service. We've been a retrofit provider in California since 2006 and have several locations up down the West Coast, including one here in Portland. We've worked with a lot of school districts over the past few months, retrofitting some buses before the original January 1st, 2017 deadline.
Can you hold on just a second?
Yeah, sure.
Well, you need to introduce yourself.
Oh, sorry. I thought I did. David Scarf on behalf of Diesel Emission Service.
Thank you.
Okay. So we retrofit a lot of school buses for the January 1st, 2017 deadline. A lot of successful retrofits and happy school districts. I know that with the deadline extension and more time for the school districts to opt to become early adopters of new technology, especially with funds that weren't available when the rule was originally passed, will definitely be well received by a lot of the school districts. The Department of Education also indicated in our diesel workshop group that over 2,000 older school buses are eligible for retrofit right now, at about 400 buses that would be eligible after the 2025 deadline. Retrofitting has become one of the most feasible and cost-effective solutions to reduce diesel emissions, and prioritizing the retrofit of these school buses would help the state maximize the Volkswagen settlement funds. In addition, I would like to add that requiring the DQ to set high standards in order to be on the clean diesel providers list will help to ensure that the school districts and the students are protected, you know, from any issues that may arise from an installation. Because the buses carry precious cargo, the vendors should be approved by the manufacturers to work with their systems, ensuring that they have the proper training and are utilizing the proper mounting systems to ensure that the buses are safe and achieve the desired emissions reductions. For years, California has required all school bus installations to file an installation manual specific to the bus and the engine configuration. Once the installation was complete, California Highway Patrol would inspect the buses to ensure compliance with the manufacturer's installation manual. Any issues as a result of a poorly installed system would have to be corrected before the bus could go into service. This method kept the installations consistent on all the buses, and safety and serviceability were greatly increased. DEQ may not be able to implement rules as strict as California, but strict upfront requirements and the possibility of being removed from the clean diesel providers list will help to ensure that the quality and safety standards are met. Thank you. That's all I have.
Thank you very much. Any questions? No? Paige, go ahead.
Good afternoon, co-chairs and committee members. For the record, Paige Spence on behalf of the Oregon League of Conservation Voters and the Oregon Conservation Network. The Oregon Conservation Network includes groups such as the Oregon Environmental Council and Neighbors for Clean Air, who you just heard from. And we made Retiring Oregon's Dirtiest Diesel one of our network's, one of our six legislative priorities for this session. And we are, of course, glad that the bill is before you now, and we do urge your aye vote, but know that we do not consider our dirty diesel priority to have been met with the current version of this bill. Findings show that kids who ride school buses with clean air technology and or cleaner fuels benefit from less pulmonary inflammation, quicker lung growth over time, and reduced absenteeism when they ride on buses with these technologies and fuels. So we, of course, support using this money for school buses, absolutely, and for Oregon's children. But to say that we are disappointed in the many weakenings and now missing pieces of this bill would be an understatement. Because Oregon does have a diesel problem, and diesel harms everyone, not just children. All Oregonians face serious health risks due to high levels of diesel exhaust, particularly those close to highways and in urban areas. Diesel is also a known greenhouse gas that contributes to climate change. Diesel pollution may contain hundreds of chemical compounds, including sulfates, ammonium, nitrates, elemental carbon, condensed organic compounds, and even carcinogenic compounds, and heavy metals such as arsenic, selenium, cadmium, and zinc. And many of these compounds are well-known causes of cancer. The good news is that clean diesel makes economic sense for Oregon. The U.S. EPA estimates that for every $1 invested in reducing diesel exhaust, a community may achieve up to $13 in public health benefits. So fixing school buses is great. It's a good start, but it's not enough to achieve our state's health benchmarks. Without a firm timeline for retiring or retrofitting the dirtiest diesel engines currently in use, we will continue to lose lives and pay the high cost of chronic disease attributable to diesel pollution. On the environmental side, exhaust from diesel engines is also a major source of black carbon, which is a potent contributor to climate change. Black carbon is the sooty black material that results from the incomplete combustion of organic matter in fossil fuels like diesel. So, as I mentioned, we can solve these problems in Oregon. New diesel engine burns about 95% cleaner than older engines, 2007 and older. And it's pretty exciting to have the money from our Volkswagen settlement to jumpstart our investment in cleaner engine technology. The Oregon Conservation Network very much looks forward to being at the table in the interim to allocate the additional 2/3 of the settlement money, but only accompanied by robust health protective diesel regulation with deadlines. So as I mentioned in the beginning, disappointment in this bill in its current form is an understatement. Those of us who live in the Portland metro area especially will continue to breathe a myriad of diesel particulate matter and a number of other incredibly toxic chemicals that are found in these compounds. So thank you for voting for this bill, and I look forward to working with you all and considering your support for a stronger pieces of legislation in 2018. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you very much, both of you.
Thank you.
That's all that I have in terms of listed, and that's good because we are really coming under a time crunch here. So I need for us to continue this rather quickly. So I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1008 and open the work session on Senate Bill 1008. And
Mr. Chairman, I move Senate Bill 10008 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
1008. If you get 10,000, we're in trouble.
1008. Thank you very much.
It's possible in this place.
Just
so
overjoyed with all the progress we're making here.
Chair Witt moves the moves the adoption of Senate Bill
1008.
See, I did it. Thank you very much. 1008. And I'm going to need to call the roll, and I need to get Senator Taylor in.
Here she is. I need to make a comment.
Okay, that's fine. If you'd like to make a comment.
This really is, I'm going to vote yes, and it might surprise a few people that I am going to vote yes, but
It has to do with, do I want the money to stay in DEQ or do I want the money to go to schools? And this is a tough question in that I don't want to be said that I support these arguments because I'm not, I kind of doubt that they really are legit. But I do think that I don't want the money to stay in DEQ because I have such a disdain for that agency that this looks like a pretty good option that some schools will get some new buses out of the deal. So I will vote yes.
All right. Thank you. Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I, too, was thinking, I was telling a colleague up here that maybe I'll go throw myself in the street and let the cars run over me because of the way that the environmental community painted this, that we all should be about halfway in the grave anyway. I think maybe we shouldn't overemphasize these things because I had a better, clearer understanding of voting yes before they had their testimony.
Oh.
So, but I will support it.
Representative Witt.
Mr. Chairman, I'll be voting yes on the bill, but I have grave concerns when, in my opinion, we have bottom-feeding companies like First Student that goes out and, because they're bottom feeders and choose to pay the lowest wages, the lowest benefits, have the lowest commitment to community values, and from the testimony we've heard, are one of the largest owners of dirty diesels, period, that we go out as a public institution and subsidize the bottom feeding of this company. I think it's an indictment of both the company's tactics as well as subcontracting of our public's transportation facilities. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Chair Witt, I think we should call the roll.
Representative Esquivel?
Aye.
Representative Helm?
Aye.
Representative Power?
Aye.
Representative Lewis?
Aye.
Representative Witt?
Aye.
Senator Girard?
Yes.
Senator Taylor?
Aye.
Senator Frederick?
Yes. Okay, Senate Bill 1008 has passed, and I will be taking it to the Ways and Means Committee. Who on the House side? Representative Helm, Representative Power.
Just remember it's 1008.
What's the 1008? Thank you.
Yes.
So passed. Thank you. Now we're going to move quickly to House Bill 1039, and I don't know whether Senator Roblin is around. He wanted to, is he there? Would you let him know that we're going to, there he is. Thank you. We are ready, sir, for you.
I had popcorn to watch.
Please. I'm going to open, I just did, I think opened House Bill, a public hearing and work session on 1039. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and committee, for the record, Arnie Roblin, Senate District 5. The Oregon coast from Coos Bay to Tillamook Bay and over into Sheridan and Falls City in the valley. This has been a really big part of my life for a long time. Ocean acidification hit the coast hard back in 2007 through 9, and we didn't know what it was. There's a little hatchery in Neatarts Bay called Whiskey Creek that raises most of the larvae for oysters, for the little individual growers of oysters, as opposed to the big companies who have their own facilities to raise the oysters. And all of a sudden, all their oysters started dying, all their larvae started dying, and people couldn't figure out what to do about it. And it turns out that some really great scientists at Oregon State University, and you'll have one coming to talk to you in a few minutes as part of this conversation, came up with the understanding of what was happening with respect to the chemistry of the ocean. They made a machine called the Burkeolator after Dr. Burke, and it takes the water that comes in, the intake, at the little hatchery, and it tests it on an ongoing basis, and it adds the buffer it needs to get it to the right acidic level so that oysters can form shells. Because what happened, what they found, was that the acidic level in the ocean had gone to a point where the little ability for the little guy to start forming his shell became impossible, because the acidic ocean water took all the calcium away, and all of a sudden they all died. They built the machine. It started working. They started looking at the ocean chemistry and recognizing that it really is getting slightly more and more acidic. The amount of carbon in the water makes a difference. And what's interesting in Neatarts Bay, they have now learned that if they take the water on bright, sunny days, it's not as acidic, because all the grass that's in the water takes the carbon dioxide out of the water, and it is less acidic. We also have a problem with hypoxia off the coast, and you've heard that for a while, and that's big areas where there's not enough oxygen, and it just kind of rolls along the ocean, and everything that's in those hypoxia areas dies. And we don't know if there's more or less. We've know they've always been out there to some extent. The doctor's going to be here later can talk about it. But we on the Oregon coast are the epicenter for this. Because of the way the ocean works, we have an upwelling that takes place every summer. So in the summer, you have the coldest water on the beach, because all that cold water that's coming from Japan around the ocean in the current that's there brings this cold water off the coast full of nutrients and stuff, and then it upwells because of the wind formations, and you get lots of nutrients, which make this a really productive place. But it also brings water that's been on the bottom of the ocean getting more and more hypoxic and more acidic all the time. So if you're out farther in the ocean, you don't get quite the same effect of this ocean acidification. We are waiting to see what's going to happen next. We've brought scientists together with the Oregon Science Trust to ask what are the things that we need to worry about the most. And they say in our labs, the amount of acidification in the ocean, the next little critter we need to watch for is mussels, and whether the mussels that are on those beach, on those rocks, whether their larvae are going to be able to survive in nature. And that'll be an interesting thing to watch. So what this bill does is to say our scientists are some of the most knowledgeable in the world, and we're looking at building a new campus at Oregon State University at Newport. We would like to have a center of excellence on hypoxia and ocean acidification there, and this is the beginning of all of that conversation, putting together a really top-flight group to watch over it, both the Science Trust that we formed a few years ago and OPAC, Oregon's own ocean group of people up and down the coast, have both identified ocean acidification as probably the number one issue that we're having to face and deal with right now. We need to figure out how do we as a state respond to this emergency. Our fishermen are engaged. I asked about crab, what's the problem there, and it's interesting, crab larvae are just dumped into the ocean and they float up down the coast, come back and drop out when they get out of the water column. Generally, in areas close to where they were first laid by their parents. So it's an interesting, totally different kind of process for them. They do not seem to be affected as much, but some of these other little crustaceans do. This, along with another bill that I think came out of here that Catty McEwen and Betsy Johnson worked on Shellfish Initiative, and has been passed out, are part of a whole series of things we're trying to do at the Coastal Caucus and other places to make sure we do the adaptation and understanding that we need to have to make sure we can address this issue in the future. So I would encourage your support. I think the total cost at the beginning right now is just for hiring some staff for Fish and Wildlife to help run this commission. We would really like to see this happen. So thank you for the interest, and I would be glad to answer any question that I can. And I know Dr. Barth here is here as well. So.
Thank you very much, Senator. Are there any questions for Senator Roblin?
Thank you.
No, thank you very much.
Thanks.
I have four people scheduled. We are supposed to be out of here by 2:30, and we have two other bills to deal with. So if I am rushing you, yes, I am rushing you. If you wouldn't mind, please come forward. Tom Wolf.
Again.
Again.
Last time.
And Jack Barth, if you would come forward, please. Thank you.
He just keeps turning up, doesn't he?
Co-chair Frederick, co-chair Witt. I'm going to be really brief. Tom Wolf, Trout Unlimited. My testimony speaks for itself. It should be on there. This is a good bill to protect the ocean, and Ocean problems are the biggest unknown science for salmon. And I've done other to invite you to my July 7th retirement party. So Ritter's 7 to 8, I've all 6 to 8. I've already dropped my cards at all your offices. So hopefully you can be there if we're still here. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Jack Barth, please, if you would.
Co-Chair Frederick and Co-Chair Witt, members of the committee, I'm Jack Barth. I'm a professor of oceanography at Oregon State University. Been working offshore for 30 years or so. I'm also the executive director of the new Marine Studies Initiative. You heard Senator Roblin refer to that effort down at OSU. I'll keep this brief. I mean, we know Oregon, the ocean, the coast, and seafood, those are all iconic things to us, things we want to keep working well. But we've got a new threat that's hitting our shores, and that's ocean acidification. You heard Senator Roblin talk about the CO2 going into the ocean. It comes across the North Pacific, and it makes landfall right on our beaches. And we just published a paper in Nature Scientific Reports that measures that right on the beaches. And we can see that Oregon is facing lower pH waters, and it's facing some of the worst challenges of the U.S. West Coast. Now, having said that, there's some bright spots. The geography of the low pH waters, we're starting to understand that. We need to make more measurements. But if we know there's some bad spots and some good spots, we can start to manage the ocean to adapt and keep moving forward. The other thing I want to highlight is the partnerships between you as policymakers, we in higher education, and the community and the industry. This Oregon's really a unique place for that happening, I can tell you, having worked elsewhere in the country. So what this bill does is establish that, move that partnership forward. It establishes the policy and the council that will allow us to get at the heart of what we need to address this issue. So I would really urge us to move forward on that, just like Senator Roblin did. We want to harness the knowledge of the scientists, the practical experience of the fishermen and shellfish growers, the deep capabilities of Department of Fish and Wildlife, and our ability to educate and train the next generation. So I'd be happy to answer any other questions, but I urge passage of the bill.
Any questions? The two of them. No? Thank you very much. Lucinda and Ed? Okay, Ed, you're in the overflow. I'm not sure, is it? All right. What is his last name? I cannot really quite tell.
Oh, Averill.
Averill, thank you. If you please introduce yourself.
My name's Lucinda Heights Claybaugh.
You can step back from the mic. Okay.
I'm Lucinda Heights Claybaugh, and I have been a Portland Community College math and science professor, and I also have worked in my life before Oregon for the National Park Service, and have done fish inventories and bird inventories, but I've also worked for Alaska Department of Fish and Game and on contract work. And then I also worked at a fish hatchery in Alaska with salmon at what is known as the Burrow Creek Farms hatchery across from Skagway, Alaska. In all of those experiences, I have watched what kinds of conditions.
Lucinda, you're going closer and closer to the microphone. Back off just a little bit.
Sorry. What I've observed is that salmon are very picky, and unfortunately we're learning that bicarbonates are also very picky creatures. And when you don't have exactly the pristine conditions that you need, they don't do well, and they don't thrive. A lot of species have troubles when you start shifting your pHs, when you start shifting your temperatures, when you have turbidity in water, when you have pollution, when you have toxics. And unfortunately, we aren't that good about keeping our ocean waters clean. And we haven't been good about keeping our rivers clean that go to the oceans. And all of that connects, and it does affect things. But my concerns now are that you please spend this money. It is relative pittance when you look at how much is being spent in other places right now. You're looking at, for the one FTE position, and then a 0.75. My assumption is that you're expecting student labor, a lot of free student monitoring, people getting out there doing a lot of the actual science work, which is fine. I always used my students. I always took my students and did a lot of work too. But be aware that they're asking very little money to do this, and it's an extremely important thing that we need to do. Please pass this bill.
Thank you very much. Ed,
yes.
Please.
I'm Ed Averill, former engineer and climate follower these days. I want to congratulate the people who put this bill together and encourage its passing. It reads wonderfully. It is clearly an effort to leverage a lot of good people that already exist and are already trying to work together to do something that's very important. As everybody said, the oceans are in trouble, and they're going to be more so. And if we don't keep up with it, we won't have a chance on figuring out how we fit in. So
thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you both. No questions? Okay, we're going to go into the work session on House Bill 1039. And are there any?
Mr. Chairman, a point of personal privilege.
Yes.
I apologize to you and the rest of the subcommittee, but this work session is going to involve two bills, which this subcommittee has not heard. And I personally will find it exceedingly difficult to vote on something that we have not heard public testimony on. And one of the bills, as I understand, had a 5-4 vote. It's obviously with controversy. And as an elected representative of the people, I feel that I cannot, in good conscience, vote for either.
Chair Witt, I'm just opening right now 1039. I'm just talking about the work session right now.
I'm sorry, sir.
You're jumping ahead of me.
I'm premature.
Okay, thank you. Let's go to that one first.
I'm premature. Thank you.
These we haven't heard.
Just.
I understand where you're going.
Thank you.
Coach, LFO recommends adoption of the Dash 1 amendments, which would add in the funding for the position.
Mr. Chairman, I move the adoption of the Dash 1 amendment to House Bill 1039.
I was right.
Senate Bill? What do we have here?
I was wondering that.
It is Senate Bill.
Let me clarify the record. What am I saying? Senate Bill? Senate Bill 1039. Thank you.
This is wrong.
Yeah, that's right. The agenda is wrong there.
I was right.
Senate Bill. So we are. Chair Witt moves the adoption of the Dash 1 amendment. Is that Dash 1? Dash 1 amendment to Senate Bill 1039. Is there any objection? Any discussion? No? Thank you very much. But that has been passed. Now.
LFO recommends that SB 1039 be amended by the Dash 1 amendment be moved to the full Ways and Means Committee.
Mr. Chairman, I move Senate Bill 1039 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Chair Witt moves Senate Bill 1039 to the full committee of Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objection? No? Would you please call the roll?
Representative Esquivel?
Aye.
Representative Helm?
Aye.
Representative Power?
Aye.
Representative Lewis?
Aye.
Representative Witt?
Aye.
Senator Girard?
Yes.
Senator Taylor?
Aye.
Senator Frederick?
Yes. Senate Bill 1039 passes, and
carry that? Well, give it to Arnie.
Oh, Arnie,
he's
of course, he's sitting.
Back
I always do that. Arnie Roblin will carry it on the full for the Ways and Means.
Cost him a couple chocolates.
He will. That's true. And on the House side? Representative Power. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Do we have somebody else coming down for you?
We're going to need someone, Mr. Chairman, I think.
Would you please call Representative Nathan.
She's
Nathanson.
Aware. Oh, so if you want to take a quick recess.
We'll do it a quick recess because we're supposed to be out of here in 3 minutes, but I think we may be able to go until 2:45.
Can we do Senate Bill 100?
Senate Bill, Representative. We're starting the work session on Senate Bill 100. If you would please tell us about Senate Bill 100.
Sure thing. Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee, Senate Bill 100 relates to residential energy conservation for oil-heated dwellings. Specifically, the bill transfers the State Home Oil Weatherization, also known as SHO program, from the Oregon Department of Energy to the Housing and Community Services Department. It also eliminates outdated references to the Fuel Oil Dealer Program. The program transfer is operative on January 1st of 2018. We have a dash A3 amendment. All that amendment does is it reduces other funds expenditure limitation in the Department of Energy to accommodate the program moving out, and it increases other funds expenditure limitation in the Housing and Community Services Department for receipt of the program. Since it's done mid-biennium, the remaining budgetary changes will be made in the 2019-21 biennium.
Okay, thank you very much. Are there any questions? No questions? Would you
LFO? Need a motion? Yeah, LFO recommends adoption of the A3 amendment.
LFO, go ahead.
I move adoption of the A3 amendment to Senate Bill 100.
Representative Nathanson moves adoption of the A3 amendment to Senate Bill 100. Any objections? Any discussion? No. So moved.
LFO recommends that Senate Bill 100, as amended, be moved to the Ways and Means Full Committee.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 100, as amended, to the full committee with the due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Chair Nathanson moves Senate Bill 100, as amended, to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? No? Is there any objection? Oh, you need to call the roll. That's right.
Representative Esquivel?
Aye.
Representative Helm?
Aye.
Representative Power?
Aye.
Representative Lewis?
Aye.
Representative Nathanson?
Aye.
Senator Girard?
Yes.
Senator Taylor?
Aye.
Senator Frederick?
Yes. Did you want to take this one? No? No. Okay, I will do that on the floor there. And who on the House? Car? He's going. I got that. Okay, thank you.
Representative Power.
Oh, yes. Okay. All right, Senate Bill 100 passes, and we'll move on to the Ways and Means Committee. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 3166. And would you please tell us about that one?
Sure, Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee. House Bill 3166 relates to the State Department of Energy. House Bill 3166 transfers the Small Scale Energy Loan Program, also known as SELP, from the Oregon Department of Energy to the Oregon Business Development Department. The transfer, as amended, is effective on July 1st, 2018. The measure also repeals the inactive Energy Efficiency and Sustainable Technology Loan Program and abolishes the associated program funds. Right now, the Department of Energy's budget includes the budget for the SELP program. But since this transfer is going to happen on July 1st, we will make the associated budget adjustments to both the Department of Energy budget and Business Oregon's budget in the February session, since we're so very close to the end of session right now. The Dash 8 amendment, which is online, removes the Energy Facility Siting Task Force that was in the bill. It eliminates a $3 million general fund appropriation that was in the bill, and then it adjusted the operative date from January 1st, 2018 to July 1st, 2018.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions?
No question. I have a comment, Mr. Yes. Chair. It's helpful. This bill moved through the Environment and Energy Committee, and I wanted to, based on Representative Witt's statement, I wanted to go back and check the vote on this. It was a 5-4 vote, and I won't speak for my Republican colleagues that voted against the bill. The description of the bill is quite accurate. This doesn't really have budget implications of the scale that we've been dealing with, and it simply moves programs out of the Department of Energy And that's a desired outcome, both by the governor's office and by our committee. So that's what the bill does. I can't be sure what the objections to the bill were, except perhaps the programs themselves.
I think I will find out about the objections very shortly.
Well,
Senator Girard.
Yeah, the objection is there's no public hearing before this body.
There was before our policy committee. That's the point of my comment.
Yeah, but
what's that help us?
How does that help us or educate us or so that we know how to cast our vote? And I support Representative Witt and his frustration. You just can't go directly to work session on policy bills before this committee because we're giving a recommendation to the full and we know nothing about it. And now I can go through it. And the fact that it's in red and our party says it's a bad bill probably tells me that it's not a good bill, and I'll vote no. But I'd sure like to hear from the people out there that, you know, so that we can come to some kind of a conclusion. But that's not the way Ways and Means should be run, and that we should always have a public hearing before this body.
Thank you. Yes, Representative.
Mr. Chair, I would point out that we do advise that for public hearings of bills that are in Ways and Means, that the testimony and the discussion be directed toward the fiscal impact of the bill. And this one seems pretty straightforward since programs were in one agency's budget, now they need to be moved to another agency's budget. That's what's going on with this fiscal impact. It's moving money for an existing program from one place to another.
And the program continues. Okay. Any other questions? Any other discussions? No? Do you have to?
I have a recommendation.
Recommendation.
LFO recommends adoption of the -A8 amendment.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, I move adoption of the -A8 amendment to House Bill 3166.
Chair Nathanson moves adoption of the -A8 amendment, A8 amendment here to House Bill 3166. Is there any objection? No objection to that? Thank you. So adopted.
LFO recommends that House Bill 3166, as amended, be moved to the Ways and Means Full Committee.
Mr. Chair, I move 3166 be moved to Ways and Means Full Committee with a due pass recommendation.
As adopted.
As adopted. As amended.
As amended.
As amended.
As amended. Thank you. Chair Nathanson moves House Bill 3166 as amended be moved to the Full Ways and Means Committee. Any more discussion on that? No? Would you please call the roll?
Representative Esquivel?
No.
Representative Helm?
Aye.
Representative Power?
Aye.
Representative Lewis?
No.
Representative Nathanson?
Aye.
Senator Girard?
No.
Senator Taylor?
Aye.
Senator Frederick?
Yes. The House Bill 3166 is adopted or is approved and will be moving to the Full Ways and Means Committee. And I guess I'll be the one who will be taking it to the Full Ways and Means Committee. And on the House side, Representative Helm, thank you very much. And having done that, we managed to make it through, and we still have about 8 minutes. If you'd like to sit in here, you certainly can. But we're supposed to be out of here very shortly. I'm going to close the Subcommittee on Natural Resources for June 29th, 2017. Thank you.
Oh, where am I?
2017. Thank you.